Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Colson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all had a great summer and been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Director Shepard, and with me, as always, is Director Stolte.
Cut it off. Cut it off.
What? What?
I'm dying here. Cut it off.
Okay. All right. Hang on. Josh, are you okay?
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. I'm starving. I hate when you can't get the chip thing open, and then it just explodes. But I was starving. I was dying, man. But thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. chip files.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I just wanted to cut it off. It's just, I've got to get ready for the show. Are we rolling?
We are going.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be back.
I am very happy to be back as well, and I don't think the episode disappointed at all. We had a fun summer talking about and speculating about what was coming here, and now I can't believe it. We're here. It's a new season.
It is. This to me kind of kicked off the entire fall season of TV.
It does. This is we're getting. I mean, it seems like everybody starts later and later. And this was one of the few premieres this week. I think there might have been another show that started last week, but this is nice. I mean, it really was fall when this started.
Yeah, and it was a great way to kick it off. It really was.
So let me just thank everybody for joining us here on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, where you will undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives, which is presented to the public as a dramatic hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And Josh and I are here every week that the show airs, and we will be doing discussion and commentary and kind of breaking it down, giving you information about the comic book references, if there are any, and just basically trying to understand what's going on here and maybe taking it to a different level than maybe you have gotten with a casual viewing.
It's great because, you know, with the superhero genre, you can really make some cool connections with the comics and in the Marvel universe with the movies. And so there's so much to talk about, and it is just a blast talking with you, and I have a lot of fun doing it. And I think it's educational. It's fun and educational. It's fun-educational.
It's fun-vacational. Wow, we are, between all of our podcasts, we are coming up with all sorts of cool words. I think we had edutainment on our Green Arrow, Green Justice podcast last week. And now, what'd you say it was?
Fun-educational?
Fun-educational.
That's right.
Excellent.
I'm working on adding those to the curriculum.
Oh, good. Yes. So that is classified material, so please don't share that outside of this podcast. But you will continue to learn such interesting words here on the show. So, Josh, why don't you let everybody know, just give us kind of the brief on this episode, just to get everybody back up to speed if it's been a few days since they saw the episode.
Okay. All right. So if you could open your folders for this mission here. This is Season 2, Episode 1. Here we go. This is it. Shadows was the name of this episode, and it aired on September 23rd of 2014 originally. Now, it was written by Jed Whedon and Marissa Tancharoen. Now, did they write the season premiere last year, too? Is that right?
Yeah, along with, I believe, Joss Whedon helped them out
right
with that as well.
That's right. Okay, so, but this time it was just the two of them. It was directed by Vincent Miziano and... Here we go. Look out, because they're Nazis on the loose. And they've got an 084. Sorry, an 084.
Ah.
Yes. And this mysterious obelisk can turn... Oh, never mind. Agent Carter's on this. She's going to take care of all these artifacts that are left over. And, you know, after the crushing defeat of Hydra. But hold on a second. That was in the past. That was in the past. Of course, Agent Carter in her heyday there when she was first getting started with what we know now as S.H.I.E.L.D. Well, not so much what we know now, I guess. That was a long time ago, right? But let's look at the present day because now Director Coulson is gathering together as many loyal operatives as he can to rebuild S.H.I.E.L.D. But it's going to be an uphill battle, as you know, because when Hydra has allies like, you know, the quicker picker upper, the absorbing man, Carl Creel, he's after the obelisk that Agent Carter confiscated all those years ago. And man, I have not seen Nazis this persistent since they were looking for the Ark of the Covenant. But, you know, Coulson's team is going to do their best to accomplish their mission with a little help from a very dejected and hairy ex-Agent Ward. But General Talbot is after them.
Oh, my gosh.
Hydra is more extensive than they had originally believed. And their technical expert, Fitz, is having some issues with, well, reality.
Mm. Give me the obelisk. I give you the whip. So, wow.
That's probably not a very good deal.
Yeah. So, and that's true. And Fitz is on the fritz.
It's going to be Fritz Simmons this year.
Fritz Simmons, yeah. It's nuts. It's just going to be Fitz. Yeah. So, well, before we get into discussing the show, let's go over a little bit of some news we've got about the show. It seems like we've talked about so much stuff already during our summer spectaculars, which you can go back in the archives and listen to. We did three this summer to kind of get everybody up to speed, and so we've covered a lot of news elements there, but. One thing we hadn't covered, and you may notice it on your music player of choice or on the computer, however you're listening to this podcast, but we do have a new podcast show logo. I don't know if you'd noticed that yet, Josh.
Oh, yeah, of course. I love it, actually.
We had the very high-tech version for season one, but we discovered that Hydra had actually infiltrated our old logo. So we needed to redesign it, and we kind of just went right back to the basics. I mean, that's what we do. We had to break it all the way down, and we're having to build it back up again. So it's a little simpler. I feel it's a little bit easier to read, and hopefully it'll stand out amongst all the other S.H.I.E.L.D. podcasts. So it'll be very easy for you to point out to your friends which one is the best here, Case Files, right there.
Yeah, and plus our old one, you know, it had some subliminal messages that we found that may have been influencing you last season. So we apologize for that. Hydra should take full responsibility for that.
Right, right. Yeah, that was all part of the Hydra podcast that was going to the Hydra Case Files podcast, which I don't think we'll be part of that this year.
No. I am loyal to S.H.I.E.L.D.
Also, yes, very loyal. Also, we wanted to let you know that we will be covering the Agent Carter show when it airs during the hiatus of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. during the winter break. There are going to be 8 episodes of that, so we will be continuing it. You will be able to find that show, Agent Carter Case Files, on our feed here as well. So if you don't want it, you can just delete it. But if you are watching the show and want to continue on listening to that, there's nothing else you'll have to do. It'll just come right down in your podcast feed. So yeah. Look for a little more information on that as it comes about towards the end of the year. We'll make sure you get all the details.
Well, if there's any, you know, the season premiere is any indication, I suspect you probably want to watch it very closely because it probably has some implications for the present day S.H.I.E.L.D. show.
I feel that they are pushing Agent Carter very hard, considering that's the first thing that you see, basically, in the season 2 premiere. So I think she will feature heavily throughout the season. Whether or not she appears in, you know, more episodes before her show airs, I think there will definitely be a feeling of Agent Carter, you know, permeating the season here.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Agent Carter, they did cast a new team member, or actually, I guess, her tough but fair-minded boss, SSR Chief Roger Dooley, and it's played by an actor named Shay Whigham. So no relation to the police chief, as far as I know. And then we also wanted to let everyone know, we had talked about this on our summer show, that there is a S.H.I.E.L.D. comic book coming out that will be a monthly comic from Marvel Comics. It starts in December. The first issue is scheduled for December 31st and written by Mark Wade with art by Carlos Pacheco. And then 37,000 variant covers. But the gist of this is they are doing a new S.H.I.E.L.D. comic, which there hasn't been an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. comic as such. Plus, they're bringing the Marvel Comic Universe versions of May, Sky, Ward, Fitz, and Simmons into the Marvel Universe because they hadn't existed there. And let me just read you this quick brief about the about it. It's a rotating crew of mission-specific top-flight Marvel artists, and they make you one promise. Every issue, 20 pages, one mission, unlimited budget, unlimited imagination, six periods, and a helper monkey. Welcome to Level 8. Welcome to S.H.I.E.L.D. So you can start seeing that in December. December will also see the release of...
You had me at monkeys.
Yeah. Little monkey. I was going to do a Bad Dates reference there, too, just to bring it back around to Indiana Jones again. Also in December, there's a, I guess it's a trade paperback. It's a collection of several issues. It's called Captain America, Peggy Carter, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. And it features a number of previously told stories collected from appearances of Peggy Carter, a.k.a. Agent Carter. It'll collect Captain America and the first 13, Captain America 184 to 186, and material from Captain America, the 2011 series, number 1 and 2, and Tales of Suspense, number 77. So some cool stuff coming there. So if you want to see more adventures with the characters from the TV show, you can check these out, though they will not be in the same continuity as the TV show in the way that Arrow and Flash have been doing their comic books. So they've got a separate comic book continuity for the TV show versions of their shows. But the characters will be showing up in the Marvel Universe now. So that's
I can
cool.
enjoy both. I love reading just stories about the characters that I love, even if they aren't really, you know, canon or if they fit, like you said. But I think that's kind of fun.
We'll see if they can get the likeness of some of these characters. I mean, I don't know how much they are allowed to make the characters look like the actors that portray them. Sometimes that's very distracting for me when they are trying to adapt something with a character that is very familiar, you know, and I can picture them. If the artist doesn't quite capture that, like I feel the artwork I've seen of Coulson in the comics, it's very hard to capture Clark Gregg's look. And maybe they're not trying to. Maybe there's something that they don't do that. But, I mean, he's very nondescript. I mean, he's just a guy, you know. There's nothing, you know, he doesn't have a really prominent nose or chin or glasses or, you know, crazy hair or anything like that. So,
crazy hair Coulson, is that? Yeah. He's a new agent? That's what he went by when he was younger, you know.
Possibly, yeah. Maybe when he was agenting back in the late 70s or something like that. So,
well, all right. I like the comics that if they just kind of capture the sort of the essence of the character. They don't have to copy it exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I know. I'm more for kind of a realistic art style in my comic books.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I like cartoony for certain things, you know. But there's, you know. I know what I like. I guess I don't know. It's hard to describe. Anyway, you ready to get into talking about Shadows?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
All right. So you kind of gave us a rundown of what's going on in the episode. So S.H.I.E.L.D.'s been on the run for approximately, I'm saying about 3 to 4 months. I don't believe it was specifically said in the show, but based on the comment from General Talbot, or I guess... Brigadier General Talbot, he's been chasing them through the winter.
Yeah.
So it's been 4 months plus a couple weeks since we last saw one of their adventures. They finished up in May. So I think that's it's about, you know, probably real time since we last see them. So, you know, from a plot perspective, I feel that the episode, you know, was very simple. I guess they've been on the run. They're trying to hide. They've got Fitz working on some cloaking technology, but as you mentioned, he's a little out of touch with reality. So they are, you know, have a mission to go in and basically steal a Quinjet because they haven't been able to get the cloaking technology working for the bus. So it's been basically on mothballs since the end of last season, in beginning of the end. And then they discover that Hydra is still out there, and they think that, you know, Talbot's done a pretty good job of running them to ground, at least based on his press. There were some great pieces with George Stephanopoulos there. But what they find out is that Hydra is actually everywhere. You know, the typical kind of scene is the map lights up and there are just hundreds of little spots all over showing that Hydra is out there. And obviously we've got enough plot elements there to last us all season. Initial thoughts, what did something just grab you out of the gate with this episode? What did you think about the direction that they seem to be heading in, just in terms of
in general, or right at the beginning of it?
Just in general, I guess the entire mission element. You know, I mean, when we left last season, Coulson had just been given the directive to rebuild S.H.I.E.L.D. So right. He's been hard at work there. It seems like he has got quite his own network, you know, going here. We've got some new characters we're going to talk about here in a minute, but you know, he needs to rebuild, and so that's kind of, I feel like they took us in the middle of the storyline of Coulson rebuilding and like set us off on a path, and I can kind of see what I think might be their long arc, you know, for the season. So I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about.
Okay, well, I really kind of like that there was a big gap in there, that they sort of started the storyline with S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of not on its feet so much, but maybe its knees hunched over a little bit, leaning against the table. I don't know, but I like that they have some agents already. You know, even if they're just mercenaries, or they have a little bit of resources. Clearly, Agent Koenig is feeling comfortable in his role. And I'm anxious to see more of him. I really enjoyed that. I really like that Coulson's kind of running himself ragged. I think that's going to, you know, come into play big time in the story. And I like that we have some, you know, I kind of mentioned that they have all these mercenaries and stuff, but I kind of like that they're a little bit more skilled in, agenting, you know, fighting and understanding, you know, kind of spy stuff. Because it felt like at the beginning of last season, even though almost all of them were real true agents, it didn't really feel like they had much experience, you know?
Right, because, well, you had Coulson and May and Ward, who had been, you know, working probably some kind of field ops together, but then you've got, you know, Fitz and Simmons, who, you know, were techies, and then Sky gets added into that, and there was no other. You know, and I think we talked about this for last season, is that we didn't see a lot of what was going on with the rest of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
right.
You know, seeing how other agents operate and things like that, so that we had nothing to really compare it to, give us a baseline. And, yeah, I agree. It was lacking in that. And, you know, we've talked about the first half of the season, two-thirds of the season.
Well, and again, I won't talk about that, but that, I think the problem with that was, you didn't really need any more story. You know, S.H.I.E.L.D. was king. S.H.I.E.L.D. was working fine. S.H.I.E.L.D. was taking them down, and it was almost too easy. So I feel like with this new season and this episode, I think really kind of set this up. They have all kinds of challenges that they can focus on, not just with plot, but with character. They can deal with obviously with Fitz and with Simmons how all the agents are interacting and where they're going to go, and especially, you know, Ward. But they have so many different places they could go with a story. How are they going to continue to build S.H.I.E.L.D.? How are they going to keep stopping Hydra? How are they going to keep supplying their subs? I mean, they couldn't even fly the bus because they can't fuel it up, right?
Right.
So,
they can't hide it. That was the other. I mean, that's why they're working on that cloaking technology too. So,
Yeah. So it's got so much potential for more than we had last season.
Well, it definitely feels like they, you know, they're on their own. There is no real backbone anymore. I mean, Coulson is working to get lists of operatives together, and he's having to hoof it on his feet. You've got four new agents that are working with Coulson's team. So, you know, it feels like it's a little, you know, there's a little bit more support there. But, you know, the challenges have increased monumentally, because not only do you have Hydra, you know, a.k.a. the bad guys looking for you, you've also got the U.S. military coming after you, because they don't discern the difference between S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra. To them, it's just, I mean, and it is the same side of one coin, but, you know, Coulson even tries to explain to Talbot, you know, that we're not the bad guys. You know, we're going to protect you whether we like it or not. And Talbot's like, I'm going to just take you down to the ground, and I'm going to, you know, hold you until you cry uncle. That's, you know, it's really tough when you're up against, you know, oppression and opposition like that. So, you found a great, or you heard a great quote from this episode that I'd ask you to share now.
Well, I don't know if I'm quoting this word for word, but, right at the beginning when May comes in and meets Coulson again, you know, she says something like, you know, just because you're director doesn't mean you have to do everything. And he looks at her, he says, yes, it does. And there's another fantastic plot point. How's he going to handle all that pressure of setting up S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I find this is really interesting, because it ties in with an interview that I read with Jed Whedon and Marissa Tancheron on Entertainment Weekly on the EW.com when they were talking about Coulson. Let me just share this. So Jed Whedon says, one of the things he has to be careful of in rebuilding S.H.I.E.L.D. is making sure that it doesn't get poisoned at the roots as it did the last time. One of his approaches will be to make sure everything's compartmentalized so he can remove any aspect at any point. And then Marissa says, and compartmentalization is something he was a victim of last season, so it'll be interesting to see him grapple with that idea that in order to keep his team safe, and then Whedon continues, he needs to keep secrets. This is exactly what he was struggling with for the last third of the season. This was exactly what Captain America: The Winter Soldier was about. Yet, as we see here at the beginning of this episode, Coulson is already in deep enough. It's almost like it's not a conscious choice. He's doing what he needs to do because, you know, just out of necessity. And he feels a great burden on him that, you know, Fury tasked him with rebuilding S.H.I.E.L.D. And you know, that it's, you know, Fury's not going to be around much, we can assume. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, someone dies and they say, you know, take care of whatever it is for me, you know, cause I'm gone, and they die. And then,
I don't know if we've talked about this, but where do you think Fury is? What is he doing?
Oh, he's hanging out in Europe. He's getting himself a Royale with cheese. You know, just chilling.
I don't think he's rebuilding S.H.I.E.L.D., but he's probably doing stuff on his own.
He had said he had gone off to Europe. I think at the end of Winter Soldier, he said he was going off to Europe. Or maybe it was in his final appearance in Beginning of the End last season, that he was, you know, going underground, going dark, whatever it is, and going to Europe. So, I hope, you know, maybe we'll get a cameo from him. Maybe, you know, they'll tease some stuff. You know, it'd be interesting to find out what some of the other characters that we've met before are doing. Hill, Fury, Agent Carter, the blonde version, the daughter, granddaughter, whatever, from the Captain America movie. You know, so things like that.
Yeah. Well, but, I think Fury will just be on his own, kind of acting in the shadows.
Exactly. And that's what's interesting, is that, again, almost by necessity, Coulson has to take S.H.I.E.L.D. and build it in the same way that he had a problem with it being built previously. You can tell that he's already keeping May and Skye at, you know, arm's length. Like, you know, Sky doesn't get to see him much anymore. You know, she's questioning, like, is he going to get a chance to see me? Because he's out, like I said, he's out, you know, flying around, you know, recruiting people. So it'd be really interesting to see what they do with this. But like you say, I think the possibilities and the opportunities for great storytelling, good episodes and stuff, there's a lot of potential. And I feel like they have they've let the reins loose, right? They can just kind of go for this kind of stuff now instead of letting us wait 7-8 episodes before they get into some of that meatier stuff.
Yeah, and it doesn't really feel like they're – and I could be wrong because I don't know what the directions of the movies go, but it doesn't really feel like they're tied to the movies as much as they were last season, you know, waiting for Captain America to come out.
True. The next film that's coming out will be Avengers Age of Ultron, which comes out, I believe it's the first or second week of May. And given when the season finale for season one aired, we can assume that the season finale for season two will air just before Age of Ultron, or, you know, like that week or maybe the week after. So real close. So basically the arc, as I think I see it, is that, you know, we're going to get an entire season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with this little Agent Carter break in the middle. And when we land on the other side of this season, we're going to roll right into Avengers Age of Ultron. And then whatever happened, you know, presumably whatever is happening in S.H.I.E.L.D. will actually inform Avengers Age of Ultron. Like, we'll then just, that'll be the next step in the whole universe. And we'll come back from next summer break for season three, and whatever happened in, you know, whatever Ultron does or did or is or was or whatever will then inform some season three
stuff.
He's
going to create a new age. That's
a new age. Oh, I see, because of the title, yeah. Age of Ultron.
So, yeah, I mean, and I agree with that, and that's actually really perfect timing since, you know, Captain America didn't come out. It wasn't a summer movie. It was mm-hmm. it was earlier, so I think still they can go off in just about any different direction they choose and still be connected to Age of Ultron without having to wait several episodes. So that's good. That frees them up.
So as we mentioned, there's these new characters that have shown up on the team, and you know, with the way that these got teased in the off season here, I was like, wow, you know, this is cool. We got this whole group of new characters and you know, new actors coming to the show. And then I noticed the way that they were doing the credits at the beginning, which I know a lot of people, you know, don't end up paying attention to that kind of stuff, but they had the regular cast listed, you know, so it's like starring Clark Gregg, Ming-Na Wen, and they go down through all of our main characters, and then the last one they include is Nick Blood as Lance Hunter. And then they switch over to the and guest starring, you know, thing, and then they put Triplett and Lucy Lawless and Patton Oswalt and all these people. And I'm like, that's really interesting. And of course, by the end of the episode, we had basically two of the four new characters presumably dead.
Presumably.
I, you know, part of me was like, oh, they're not dead. Well, okay, they're showing them again. They look pretty dead. But as we have come to know in the superhero genre, dead on screen does not necessarily mean dead.
No, I mean, and man, even if this wasn't a superhero genre, I can't imagine that they would waste the talents, especially like, say, of Lucy Lawless in such a short time.
Well, let me, you know, the producers and writers, you know, are, everything is done for a reason, right? They don't just write things just to write things. There is tons of thought behind this. I mean, even from, you know, when the Whedons were working on, you know, like Buffy and Angel and stuff like that. I mean, you could question, well, why are they doing this now? But then, you know, in four or five episodes, you look back and go, oh, wow, it's, you know, yeah, they knew exactly what they were doing. I see casting Lucy Lawless as twofold. One is she's a big name, so she's a big draw, and you put her in your premiere, you know, to get numbers, right? I mean, it's just from like a fiscal, you know,
sure
thing. She's a great actress too, so she adds a different chemistry to the show. She's also a big enough actress, star, you know, whatever, that what you're saying, you know, comes into play. Oh, well, they're hiring this person, you know, she's going to be around for a while. They kill her off in the first episode, presumably, again. I don't see her in any scenes from, you know, next week's episode, but, you know, I'm thinking her arm is just going
to... It was scenes from the season.
Was that what they were showing?
Yeah,
I thought it was just a...
I think so. I think it was... I mean, they didn't imply that that was what was going to happen next week. It was just like, this season on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, okay.
That was a horrible ABC announcer.
But
So I don't know. I agree. But as always, you know, you can't say with any certainty about any death of anybody on a superhero show.
Well, and I just... what kind of sticks out with me is Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, where he cast Janet Leigh, who was a big star at the time, as the title character, and then he kills her off like a third of the way into the movie, and everyone's like, "Well, you can't do that. She's the star."
Yeah, and that was completely unheard of back then.
Yeah, exactly.
That was way before, you know, the Walking Dead theory of casting people.
Right. So anyway,
I really do believe she's going to be back, not just because it's Lucy Lawless, but I think that's a big reason. But I mean, they've got more potential there. Plus, she could have this wicked cool robotic arm.
She could have this wicked cool robotic arm. She could.
And that was
be...
even foreshadowed there. That was even implied, you know.
Well, there was that other show that she was in where she was a wicked cool robot. I believe it was called Battlestar Galactica. She was a... Oh, spoiler for a six-year-old TV show, by the way. She was a Cylon.
I've been getting in trouble for that lately, so...
someone's
going to
email
in
and say, oh my gosh, I was just starting to watch Battlestar Galactica. Anyway, so... Okay, so Agent Hartley, Isabel Hartley, thoughts. What do you think about her character?
I liked her a lot. I think she was a very appealing character, rough around the edges, tough female characters. I've always kind of dug those in a TV show, which might say something about me, but I liked her attitude. I liked her seeming loyalty to Coulson. Mm-hmm. A little bit, you know, there were some guys that kind of questioned that, you know, with her when they were first going on that mission.
Right. She and Coulson had some kind of backstory. I mean, they worked together. They've worked well together.
I think obviously
he wouldn't bring someone on he didn't trust.
Yeah. And he clearly trusted her.
But like the people that she brought on, that's where he may be. Like, that starts to get out of his comfort zone, I think, just a little bit. Or at least with May and Sky. I don't know that Lance Hunter and Idaho are completely vetted, you know, with them. But, you know, basically Hartley speaks for them and says these guys are okay.
Why in the world would Sky and May be, you know, questioning people? I can't understand. Has something happened where they were betrayed by someone? Or?
There was a little incident. I mean, it was really minor, really, in terms of everything. I mean, just one guy, and then, you know, all of his buddies, you know, took down the entire organization. So,
that's
he wasn't really that loyal to that organization. He was just loyal to the one guy.
No.
So, I mean.
But as far as Agent Hartley, I really liked her. There was only one little thing that kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
Okay.
And I don't know if you agree with this or not, but I really questioned whether or not that character would have grabbed that dang obelisk. You know, she didn't know what it was. Maybe possibly nobody knew what it was. I mean, they just knew they didn't want, you know, Absorbing Man to get it. That seemed very, I don't know.
By that point, that was the least of my problems with that, with that scene. Because I agree with you. She's an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. She knows what an 084 is, or, you know, is defined as.
Well, not really, because nobody knows what an 084 is.
But I know what you mean. Yeah, but by definition, an 084 is something that you don't know what it is. So do you just go messing with it? I mean, if you look at Ward's handling, I'm sorry, if you look at Fitz's handling of the 084 in episode 2 last year, where they find the object in Peru, he's like, oh, we need to look at it. And Ward's just like, he just grabs it and goes. But, you know, like Fitz, who's about protocol, it's like, oh, you know, we got to be careful with this.
Yeah, although, so, you know, Agent Hartley is very similar to Ward as far as, you know, the tough, rugged, go-get 'em kind of thing. So, I guess maybe it fits her character, but that was the only
thing. But my biggest issue is, okay, you're breaking into a secure government facility that you have limited time in before they realize, oh, wait a second, no, the alarm has gone off. We need to get out of there. And she's opening the box. Just take the dang box and go. Why is she even opening it? I mean, I guess to double check that it's in there, but the whole box has been sealed. You know, so she's having to melt the I don't know, whatever, the lead strip or whatever they sealed it with. So
that was pretty cool, actually.
It was neat, and I liked the way they sealed it back in 1945. But so her grabbing it was kind of the least of my problems. I was like, just take it with you, and you can check it out later. That
had a few flaws in that scene, I agree.
Yeah, yeah. So then we've got the next guy, and I think we're not supposed to know what to think about this character, but I have to say I enjoy this character on screen. I think there's a lot of potential for Lance Hunter, who is the, I guess, English. I don't think he's Australian. I think he's English.
No, I think he's English. At least in the comic book, he's English.
Yeah, he's English in the comic book. And he's Hartley's, like, number two, second in command kind of guy. And he's very flippant. I loved when he was telling Idaho, when they were all going in to meet Fury, he's like, oh, and don't actually, like, look him in the eye or anything like that. And Idaho's like, what? And he's like, no, man, I'm just messing with you. So he's really cool. But, you know, he's obviously got some issues, you know. It's like when the accident happens at the end and, you know, he's forced to take action, she asks him to cut off her arm. Like, I mean, he doesn't want to, but he does. You know, she's obviously a friend of his. And then they have the whole car accident. I was, you know, first I was like, oh, okay, why isn't he doing anything? Why is he just pretending to, you know, why is he playing dead? But I'm like, you know, what would you do as, you know, a person, even with some training, when you've seen what this guy can do? It's like, you're not going to just crawl out of the car and go try to attack him.
No.
I mean, the best thing you can do is
probably scream like a little girl is what I would do, but...
So,
that's not very good agent training, is it?
No, well, I mean, obviously your training hasn't really stuck. So I think we'll have to reboot you at
boot camp.
Isn't that,
you make loud noises, right? When a super-powered villain comes up against you, you make his loud noises so to scare him away. I may be thinking of foxes.
I was going to say, if you puff yourself up and appear larger, then maybe that would scare him. So.
Okay, all right. No, you're right. I mean, I could tell what he was doing, although I would have probably stopped breathing so loudly, but,
he was breathing really loud.
He looked scared, but, I'm not sure that I could be wrong about this, but I'm not sure that, Carl Creel would have necessarily done anything. He didn't seem too worried about the whole situation. He had what he needed and he took it.
Yeah. Yeah, he did take what he needed. So, and I thought that was cool too. That, you know, he's not necessarily the smartest guy, at least in the comic books. He's like an ex-boxer, and you know, just he's like hired muscle, but he does have the thought to absorb the rubber from the tire before picking up the obelisk. So I thought that was pretty cool. The other agent, there's two other agents actually, but the other one that appears to be with Hartley, kind of as part of Hartley's team, is Agent Idaho, who I believe is from Kansas City, if I'm not mistaken, and he's the driver of the car. He is also apparently deceased. He looked pretty beat up. We don't know too much about him because I think he only had like two or three lines throughout the episode.
Yeah, and she wouldn't even let him come with him. You stay in the car.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. So, and then the fourth guy that we've only, again, just had a few lines for is Agent McKenzie, nicknamed Agent Mac, which, not to be confused with the Agent Mac that was driving the Gravitonium around in Episode 3 last season, but this guy is their mechanic. And that's, again, that's really all we kind of know about him at this point. But it seems like he came in separately from Hartley's team, and he's got his own relationship with Triplett from just, you know, they have a conversation together and stuff like that. So there's, you know, just a different dynamic there.
Sure.
I don't know what else to say about him.
No,
really.
He didn't have, save him for later, I think.
And then we had, as you mentioned, Carl Creel, Carl the Crusher Creel, a.k.a. Mr. Bounty, a.k.a. the Absorbing Man. And I was ecstatic when I heard that they were doing him. I'm like, okay, that's pretty cool, because he's a pretty big-name bad guy. I mean, he was one of the bad guys featured in the Secret Wars comic series from the mid-'80s. And, you know, you had to be a pretty big bad guy to make it into that. I mean, that had Dr. Doom, Magneto, Galactus, Molecule Man. So, you know, having Absorbing Man in there was quite a thing. But the way they brought him to screen, I felt it was very, very faithful to his portrayal in the comic books. In the comics, he's often walking around in a pair of black and white striped prison pants and no shirt, you know, so they can draw the rocky, you know, stuff on his body or whatever he's absorbed, so you can see a lot of that on his chest. And he carries a giant wrecking ball on a chain. So the fact that he pulled the stanchion down and used the ball on that as a little miniature wrecking ball was a beautiful homage to the character from the comics. I was very pleased with that.
Awesome. I speaking of screaming like a little girl, when I saw this guy, that's how I felt. I was, this is what we were asking for. Is it not what we were asking for last season?
We were asking for this, and they
powers.
Have answered us.
Yes. I mean, this is what we wanted. It was a hard foe to take down, but in the realm of possibility, you know, because they did, they kind of took him down at one point.
Yeah, they put him in the Magneto prison.
Yeah.
They had that invisible or plastic prison or whatever so that he couldn't absorb. I mean, obviously he could absorb from it. I don't know what their thoughts were about that. But
yeah, they didn't know what they were doing. So, I mean,
that was the point,
yeah.
Right? The government doesn't understand what it's up against.
Yeah, I thought it was the effects were fantastic. I hope they didn't, you know, blow their budget load in the first episode and can't do this as much, because it was wonderful. I loved it. I thought, you know, the actor, although I don't know how much real acting he had to do as Absorbing Man, I'm not judging him or anything, but I mean, I don't know that he said anything at all, did he?
He talked a little bit to the dude on screen.
That's right.
The Hydra agent or whatever.
Right. I forgot about that, but it was very cool and fantastic addition to the show. My one beef with the scenes from Absorbing Man is when he was hiding out in the warehouse at the end when they were going in to find the 084 or stop him or, you know, whatever their backup plan was. Uh-huh. You know, he's kind of hiding in the shadows there and he disguises himself as the wall.
Yeah.
Where were his pants?
I mean, he's like a gecko.
He never seemed to have taken them off. And I can't remember who walked by. If it was, I think it might've been Agent Hartley.
Yeah, it was Hartley, I believe.
You don't go, hey, look, there's some starched pants just standing up in the middle of nowhere. But
well, if you are familiar with Dr. Seuss, then you will know from the Sneetches book, there is the pants with no one inside them. A very famous story that he wrote where, you know, the narrator is scared of the pants with no one inside them. But they just wanted to be friends.
The narrator was scared, but then S.H.I.E.L.D. took the pants with no one inside them, put them in their warehouse, apparently, so no one would be injured.
Right.
So anyway, that was my only thing. As I was watching, I out loud said, wait, why don't they see his pants? But, you know.
Well, and just in case Brian Patrick Wade, who played Carl Creel, is listening, that was Josh who was questioning your acting ability. And
no,
if you email me, I'll send you his address.
That is not what – first of all, I said I am questioning his acting ability. And second of all, I do not need him to remove his pants. So I just want to be clear. I want to be clear on this, okay? Especially when we're talking about Mr. Wade there. No, I'm good.
Okay.
Good.
All right. Now that we're clear. All right. So, well, the other thing that I want to say, that Absorbing Man – what Absorbing Man means to me, in seeing him in the – season two premiere as a true villain from the Marvel comics portrayed in his full villainness, you know, with lots of effects and stuff like that. This to me is a commitment by the producers that, hey, this is what we're in for now for season two. So guys, that's the promise. That's the tacit promise that you guys have made to us as viewers, because when we had Dr. Hall on last season, and then he fell into the gravitonium, like, way early in the season, and you didn't do anything with him, like, forever, when he comes back as Graviton this season, I'm really hoping it's this season that we don't have to wait further, you know, I feel that they are going to, you know, do that character justice, and he will be a big, powerful SOB that they got to deal with. So I'm very excited about what Absorbing Man means as the potential for the other villains that they can do. So
totally agreed. And I'm guessing based on Absorbing Man so far, you know, you don't have to explain everything. I feel like a lot of superhero movies and TV shows now feel like they have to explain how this could be possible. I don't need to know. It doesn't need to be possible. It's from a comic book. It's fine.
Well, any show that explains that something has to be possible. I mean, even if it's like, you know, NCIS for, you know, why are these people working together? It's like, we can get into character backstories, but it doesn't have to always be the first appearance.
No. And I mean, frankly, and again, this is just me, but I kind of like that mystery mm-hmm. of not knowing every little thing. So, you wonder how did this guy get like this? What's going on? So, so I'm totally cool with that. And that's why I think it's better to put the superhero type stuff in this show. Maybe not so much others. You know, I can see like, you know, on Arrow, which we watch as well. That one feels okay because the hero doesn't have any superpowers, and I'm okay with that. But it's going good. Okay, so I'm very excited. Absorbing Man, yes.
So I'd like to talk a little bit now about some of the returning characters that we saw. I saw kind of a discussion online. Somebody was comparing the idea of these characters looking at their growth from the pilot just between the pilot and the premiere of season two. So, you know, since the pilot just happens, right? You know, we don't necessarily know what's happened right before it. We're kind of thrust into the story. That mm-hmm. kind of is what happens on season two here. We've, you know, there's been a number of months, you know, have passed us by. Characters have changed a lot, even from where we saw them at the end of season one, but even more so from the beginning of season one. So, for example, Coulson, we've already discussed this a little bit. You know, he was a person who was a loyal member, basically a loyal, unquestioning member of the team, of the S.H.I.E.L.D. team as a whole. And he went, you know, through entire stages of grief and anger and everything like that to end up basically not trusting the organization that he worked with and vowing to, you know, not keep secrets. And here we are at the beginning of season two, and, you know, he is kind of, like we said, is thrust back into that role of needing to keep the secrets, you know, having to compartmentalize and everything like that. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes.
Which continues to make him an interesting character. That's good.
Yeah, exactly. Now, he also worked as a surrogate father for Skye's character. You saw him imparting kind of that fatherly advice for her at the end of the original pilot where they're getting in Lola and flying off. But, you know, it's like he kind of seemed to be looking out for her and, you know, against her wishes to a degree, right? Because she was basically kidnapped by them, but, you know, and then agreed to join them by the end of the episode. So, he's really not fulfilling that role anymore. It's either that or it's, you know, it's kind of that separation element, right? Skye's grown up enough that she's able to be on her own. Coulson, you know, hasn't been around for her, you know, however we want to read into that. But there's room for Skye to be working with somebody else because Skye has now been training with Agent May. So May has kind of took over Ward's training and probably very appropriately imparted her with, you know, a number of skills and attitude that we see in Skye that didn't even exist at the end of, you know, season one. I think she's changed. She may have changed the most.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll see probably Ward has changed quite a bit, I think, too. But maybe not. Maybe not. Yeah, I think Skye, I think she's still going to have Coulson as a fatherly figure. Not so much as a fatherly figure, but I think he's still going to be looking out for her. She just might not realize it. As I was kind of thinking of their relationship, it reminded me a little bit of some Nick Fury comics that I've read where, you know, he's got to be the man in charge making the tough decisions, but whether you know it or not, he's still kind of looking out for you in his own way. Mm-hmm. And I think he's probably still going to be doing that with Skye, but she's not going to realize it. And I don't think she'll have that, I guess that connection with him, that personal connection. Because he'll have to put her away from him a little bit.
Yeah, we were getting that more towards the end of the season that, you know, there was really a connection, and it was a connection that was being made for us to kind of feel closer to her. But, I mean, she's grown enough. She's skilled. I mean, she's dropping in on, lines and stuff into the locations and everything now. She's fully capable of being an operative, you know, and working in the field, which, you know, she didn't have. She's got a new haircut. She's got a new badass clothing line. So she's ready to go.
So I like her more already.
Yeah. I mean, I can see that she's hardened as a character, right? There's now this kind of facade. I mean, she's been burned really hard, and so that's had her put her walls up, and we see that. And we see that illustrated very clearly when she goes to visit Ward, who you mentioned as someone else who's changed a lot. Not just the beard, obviously, right?
Yeah, no. Also some, you know, some scars.
I'm Brett Dalton, I think, did a good job last season. But I was not a huge fan of the Ward character as it stood until they made the switch to having him be a bad guy, and that made him a little bit more interesting. I think, you know, you'll agree with that assessment.
Oh, for sure.
But the way that Brett Dalton played Ward in this one scene, you know, in the major one scene that we got him in, that kind of blew me away, because he played him with such an, you know, he was very determined, but he had just that edge of crazy. Like he was kind of like the Joker. He's right on that edge, and is he going to slip off? He, you know, was just kind of twitchy, and I didn't know what I was going to get from the character, and that was really interesting. And I am looking forward to seeing more with this character now.
Yeah, finally. I too. And I was not a fan of Ward as a character last season either, and I think I made that pretty clear. There wasn't much there until they screwed him up. And that one scene with him, I think, was better than anything he did last season. And it was crazy because you know that he's a bad guy. I mean, you know what he did last season and how reprehensible it was. And yet you watch that one scene and you kind of feel sorry for him. And you're kind of rooting for something good to happen. At least I was, you know. Not right away, though. Not right away. I want him to work this character and get him. He's got to redeem himself. And I think I said at the end of last season that really, truly, he may have to redeem himself by eventually sacrificing himself. And I can, mm-hmm. still kind of think that's going to happen.
Well, I mean, that's for a character arc. I mean, that's the redemption phase. I mean, I think for especially these writers with the kind of the backgrounds that they have in terms of cinema and storytelling and everything like that, you know, it's not just someone apologizing for it. I mean, there's a whole redemption arc, and yeah, the ultimate dramatic endpoint for a redemption arc is a sacrifice of some kind. But what is that sacrifice? It doesn't always necessarily mean death, but it's a tough decision. It's kind of like what we saw a little bit of this from him when he shot Fitz and Simmons out of the bus at the end of last season. There was that kind of, is he really sure that he wants to do this? But yet he did it anyway.
Right.
So, you know, we know there's something going on there. We just haven't explored it enough. And I'd like to see some more episodes focusing on individual characters, I think. It's tough because it's such an ensemble show, but we only get so much of any one character. Like, you know, there was a whole section of the episode that was devoted kind of to plot, and then we got a little bit of, you know, then we kind of just touched base with everybody. A little bit of Coulson, a little bit of Sky, a little bit of Ward, a little bit of Fitz. We got these new people. And, you know, we just got a taste. But again, they got 22 episodes to be able to, you know, cover this throughout the season. I just like to, you know, move some of the storylines along more rapidly, I guess.
Yeah, well, last season they did individual episodes with characters, and it just seemed to kind of drag on for a while. So if you could just kind of sprinkle them here and there among,
well, you don't
bigger,
want to just do them just to make it
story.
Seem like, okay, we're going to do a May, we're going to do a Sky, we're going to do a Ward, we're going to do a Fitz. Okay, now it's back, we're going to do a May. You know, you don't want to do anything like that either.
No.
Yeah, I agree.
No.
You got to kind of sprinkle it out. And then there's Fitz.
Oh.
I thought this does not happen to me on television a lot, but I felt so much heartache over this character. You know, we were left last season not knowing if he was going to survive from this in coma that they had introduced into him because of, you know, his brain had been starved of oxygen for so long. So the first shot they've got here, they've got Simmons talking to him, and he's just kind of standing there like he's vegetative.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. So he's just thinking. But then, you know, the scene goes on and on and on, and I'm like, oh, what have they done to Fitz? You know, and then the joke comes, right? He pulls the earpiece out and he says, oh, I'm, you know, I was listening to the oscillation or whatever it was. And you're like, okay, we can see that he's damaged, you know, because they were talking to, what's his name?
Fitz, Agent Fitz.
Right. I'm sorry. Yeah, right. Exactly. No, I got this.
No,
I think I'm just
you got
off
it.
My meds today.
No, you got it. You're getting better. You're getting better every day.
Okay. Thank you. Thank
you
very much.
Have you taken your medicine?
I have taken my medicine.
Okay. All right.
So, but they, you know, they have us going, and you're like, okay, so, you know, there's really no, I was watching it again a second time. There's no interaction, of course, with Simmons. And there's the only person that could possibly have interacted with Simmons was May when she came down to see how Fitz was doing. And it was a kind of weird, awkward scene, but he was just being kind of weird and awkward. And Simmons was finishing his lines, and then he'd repeat them again. So, like, the answers got out. But then in that final shot where they realize, or they let us know that Simmons, you know, left and never came back, and they do the pan around him and she kind of disappears and we realize it's all in his head. That just really broke my heart.
That was awful. I mean, I'm with you. I don't even know how to describe it. I really was really sad. I mean, it made me so sad at the end to realize what was actually going on there.
Yeah.
I mean, I was kind of sad for him before, but I'm like, well, you know, I mean, he's forgetting some words. It hasn't been that long. This is a season.
And he's getting better.
He'll get better.
Yeah.
Yeah. But clearly not.
He's messed up in the head.
I'm with you. That was pretty emotional. However, I will tell you, again, just like the other ones, it makes him so much more interesting.
Yeah. Well, and looking back at The pilot, again, we've got Fitzsimmons, right? That's how they were introduced. They were inseparable. They were, you know, two halves of one coin. And here we have gone an entire arc. Simmons isn't even here anymore. It's just Fitz. And he's broken. And my question is to you, what do you think they're going to do with this storyline for him? Because bringing him back to where he was before, is that necessary? I mean, is that dramatically interesting? Or is that just, all right, so, you know, why are we going through all this if the writers just want to take him back to where he was? What else can they do with him, I guess? I don't know.
I don't think they will take him back to where he was before. I think they'll change him. I think it'll be different. But I do think they'll bring... Oh, man, I don't know what I think they'll do. I want them to bring Simmons back into the picture, the real, actual Simmons.
Right, I'm sure she'll be back. I mean, she's still listed as a regular. I mean, obviously, and she's appearing in the show right now, but as a, you know, figment of his imagination, his version of her. So,
yeah, you don't think she'll just show up on the show as a hallucination by him? That's not her part this season.
I think she will for a while, but I also think they'll need to get her back. They at some point they'll realize that he's not getting better, and even though, much like Ward would only talk to Skye, and that may be how he gets some redemption. Even though Simmons doesn't want to deal with Fitz right now, that's, you know, they're going to need to do that to, you know, for the eventual fixing of this character, of this broken character, or something like that.
But what are they going to do in the meantime? They need to have somebody that can do his job, at least the job he was doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, they had let him work on this for long enough in the episode that Coulson was like, you know what, we got to risk it all. We got to risk it all and go try to steal one of these Quinjets, which they do. So now they've got that. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, Koenig has some skills and can help out. At least this one. I don't know about any other versions of him that show up. So I'm glad they're questioning that kind of stuff on the show as well. That makes for some fun speculation. So, hey, before we run out of time here, because we're getting really close to the end, I want to talk a little bit about the 084, which, brilliant, it's called the 08, you know, things are called 084, named after the original item, which was number 084 in the inventory.
Why do they call it an 084 if it's a 084?
I
had thought, until this episode, I actually thought it was O, and then... you know, like -84.
Oh, okay. Oh, I guess I understood it to be a zero, just because I had seen how they had written the title of the 084 episode. It was, I mean, it's 0-8-4, but that's a good point. I mean, why would you think that? I mean, it's just some designation, right? So that's totally understandable that you would think something like that. So it's the first object of unknown origin that they find. It was in proximity to a crate or a box. What's in the box? What's in the box, man? Which I think you and I are pretty much sure that there are Smurfs inside, right?
I think Smurfs, yeah. I mean, it clearly was blue.
It was a blue Smurfing thing in the box.
I rewound a little bit to see if I could hear singing, but it was unclear.
There did appear to be some sort of marking. Okay, and this is for you freeze frame freaks out there, and you know who I'm talking about, because at literally the box is open, I think, for a second and a half. I mean, it's really difficult if you're not paying exact attention, but it seems to be part of maybe an arm, and there is a line, which I thought was like a stitch, like a cut or something, but it appears to be a marking,
like a straight line
with maybe some little lines coming off of it, very similar to the markings that are on the obelisk, and that Coulson was scratching into the side of the building last season. So I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that an alien came down to Earth with this device that Don't know why they would have it, that when you grab it, it turns you into ash, or, you know, basically burns you from the inside out. But, you know, hey, to each his own. And
To me, it was looking more like almost they turned to stone or something.
Well, for the Nazis, it kind of did look like that. But, I guess it wasn't ashen like you would think, just like normal ash, because she was still, her arm was still there. It was just, but to me, it looked like it I think she said it was burning her, or it felt like it was burning her, or something along those lines. So, and then when Creel takes it, you know, her arm is still there. It's still like a thing. It's not, it doesn't just disappear or turn to dust or whatever. So, maybe it's like, maybe it's called the Medusa block or something like that. If it turns you to stone. I don't know. But some interesting things. So that's been around since 1945 when the alien crashed to Earth. And I think we can assume that that blue alien is the same blue alien that was hanging out at the guest house, that their blood was the thing that was injected into Coulson and into Sky.
Yeah, I would think so.
So
I mean... That's one of the things that was in S.H.I.E.L.D.'s possession, and it was, you know, at the guest house, like you said. So I'm thinking it's the same one too. But so, what do you think? You got any besides Smurfs? What, any other theories?
Well, I think the prevailing theory is that it's Kree. We went over a number of alien names last season. We've got on our Facebook page. You can go and see the list of all the alien names that Sif listed that were blue or that had visited Earth at some point. So, but I think Kree is the prevailing idea, and you can see some of the blue Kree from Guardians of the Galaxy. So I think that's a pretty foregone conclusion. I'm sure they will do something interesting with it to give it its own little spin, make it a little bit different from, you know, what we're expecting. Or I don't even know what to expect.
I like that it showed up back then. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Dum-Dum Dugan was the one that was opening it.
Yeah. I mean, it was great to see him back too. I'm a huge fan of Dum Dum and Neil McDonough as well. So I was glad to see that he was able to make an appearance in the episode. Normally at this point of the show, we do some comic book references. There's really only one thing that kind of stood out other than the things we've already talked about. S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't usually lay a lot of references in, but Trip dressed up as a general to go to break into the facility, and he was dressed up as General Jones, and that really kind of stood out to me. And the fact that we had Howling Commandos at the beginning of the episode, Gabe Jones was the original African American member of the Howling Commandos from the comic books, so I think that was a shout out to that character. Also, we had heard that Tripp's grandfather, I believe he said, was a member of the Howling Commandos at some point. So I felt that was kind of an homage to that. But I don't know.
That's cool. We need more Tripp. I don't want him to just be a guest star. I want him to be a regular.
I do too. But, if he can continue to be a guest star of this caliber, I think that's totally cool. And, you know, I think... maybe he'll end up taking over the Falcon in the movies when the Falcon starts playing Captain America or something like that. I don't know. Who knows? We'll speculate about that as we hear more. Anything else you wanna top off about this episode?
Well, this episode made me even more excited than I already was. It had great action. It had a great storyline. As we said, completely interesting characters. So I can't wait to see where they're going with it. And now I'm stoked. Now I'm ready for next week.
Yeah, this is a really good opening. I was really excited when it started, and then I kind of finished it. And I'm like, oh, really? Is that it? That's like great. The cliffhangers are back. I forgot how infuriating these things are. But then I thought about it. And I'm like, okay, so this is just the opening salvo. I mean, they're starting off with a pretty big bang. I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff going on, but it's what they're telling us here is that kind of the future's wide open. Look at all the stuff we've got. We've got to go put down Hydra. There's plenty of plot elements to take care of, and we've got then this mysterious. We didn't even really talk about him. This mysterious German guy that was alive in 1945 and somehow also alive and looking the same 69 years later here. So
So he can stay really healthy all that time, but he still needs glasses.
Yeah, well, you know, he needed them then. It's just he can't repair what, you know, he needs, I guess.
Maybe it's just a style thing. He just really likes those tiny round glasses.
Yeah, little round glasses. So, anyway, that's all we've got for this week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files.
If you enjoy this episode, please be sure to leave us feedback on iTunes. And you can also contact us by email at shield@randomchatter.com or our Twitter feed at Agents Podcast. And, of course, check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/agentspodcast.
And also, if you feel like it, check out the other podcasts that Josh and I do, Green Justice and Arrow Podcast, and our newest one, Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, which are both available via randomchatter.com. Also, all shows are available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android and iOS. So that's a new addition over the hiatus here.
Yeah.
And if you enjoy the podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. So for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Signing off from Level 7. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.